It's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Great pictures to see in your theater of the mind in this hour of sci-fi. Later on, it's Exploring Tomorrow with a story from Philip K. Dick. Right now, it's X-1 with the tale Sea Legs, heard on May 1st, 1956, starring William Redfield, Stan Early, Charles Penman, and Richard Hamilton.
In just a moment, X-1, but first, after a hard day's work, there's nothing more welcome than an evening of variety entertainment. And that's just the tonic provided tomorrow night by NBC Radio. You'll laugh your cares away when good-natured contestants carry out the rib-tickling stunts dreamed up by MC Jack Bailey on NBC's Truth or Consequences. And later on, Groucho Marx peps things up with lots of spontaneous good fun and more of the friendly insults at which he's so accomplished. For a brighter, livelier evening tomorrow night, it's Groucho Marx and Truth or Consequences on this station. And now, stay tuned for X-1 on NBC.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire.
From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, the Frank Quattrochi story, Sea Legs.
I stood in line at the Grav 1 desk with the old Notch service record and tapes in my hand and waited for the bored processing clerk to speak. The clerk seemed utterly indifferent to the excitement of the men in the line. I wondered how long he'd been out here on this godforsaken Zone 5 planet.
Next. Name?
Robert Craig.
Occupation?
Flight officer.
Destination?
Earth.
Earth?
Anything wrong with that?
Well, I guess not. How long since you've been on Earth, Mr. Craig?
Well, I've never been there. My parents left during the second colonization of Cassiopeia. I was born there.
Have you ever been in a gravity system?
Well, just briefly. Under drugs, of course.
You'll have to go through the gravity conditioning course.
Yes, so I was told.
Proceed to the airlock chamber on your right and follow the robot's orders. Good luck. You may need it. Next.
I went into the chamber and stripped off my clothing while the robot droned its orders.
Remove all metal objects from your person. Place them in the plastic tube at your left. Now stand underneath the decontamination tube. Depress the button with your right foot. This is all. Proceed through the green door to the psychometric section. Please respond quickly to orders, and so do not impede the progress of others. Next, please.
The door to the psychometric section led into a pleasant but cold-looking room with a single metal desk. A man with a balding, high forehead sat behind the desk.
Mr. Craig? Have a seat. I'm Captain Wyandotte, the psychological officer.
Nice to meet you.
Yes, well, let's see your records. You list your destination as terror. You're certain you wish to go to Earth?
Of course I'm certain.
You're somewhat aggressive, Mr. Craig.
Look, I've been standing in line taking orders from clerks and robots for 6 hours. Every time somebody sees that I'm headed for Earth, I get the fisheye. Are they jealous or what?
I hardly think so. You've been a spaceman for 16 years, Mr. Craig. You've been zooming around in the countergraph systems and the outer galaxies without any restraints or self-discipline.
Have you ever spent 6 weeks strapped into a grav seat on a space rocket, Captain? There's a good deal of self-discipline involved in that.
I think you'll find things on Terra require a different kind of self-discipline, Mr. Craig.
Well, I'm pretty much aware of what it's like.
Are you? I suppose you've heard all the popularizations in the tapezines. Well, Mr. Craig, let me give you a word of caution. It's going to be vastly different.
I'm prepared for that, Captain. Can we get going?
Naturally. You will undergo a 20-day conditioning course.
20 days?
Mr. Craig, you've been in space 16 years. Your body is conditioned to a normal state of free fall, or at best, to acceleration. The return to gravity would kill you if you weren't prepared for it.
All right, what do I do?
Report to Centrifugal Department. Here are your papers. Oh, and Mr. Craig.
Yes?
Centrifugal is a rather trying ordeal. If during the course of treatment you should change your mind about returning to Earth, you're free to do so.
Thanks. I won't. I'd heard about Centrifugal, but you can never really know about these things until you experience them. Four times a day, we were whirled around until it seemed as if our insides were too big for our bodies. On the 12th day, it got to be too much for me. I was in the base hospital for 5 days. My roommate was an old space bum they'd brought in to die with a case of ruptured veins. His name was Charlie Brockman.
How you feel, son?
I'm pretty good, Charlie.
You get discharged tomorrow, I hear. You gonna try it again?
I guess so.
Why?
Only way I'll ever get to Earth.
You really want to go?
That's right.
You talked to anybody been there last 10 years or so?
No, you don't get to talk to many people from Earth and the galaxies. Were you ever there?
Me? Now, what would an old space bum like me be doing on Terra?
Well, I just thought maybe...
I done most of my time in Zone 5. Out there, you get to thinking anybody who stays less than 80 light years from Earth is a landlubber.
Yeah, I used to think the same. Then I took the exam for a job back on Earth, and I passed it.
I used to think I'd like to go back, but space was exciting, you know. New and raw, it tugged at your guts and it sent the blood rushing through your veins. But it was free. No bureaucrat ever lasted 6 months in Grav 5.
I had enough hitting atmospheres all over the universe, old man.
Maybe you're right. Lean over here, will you?
Sure.
Unbutton my pajama top, will you?
Okay.
There's a chain around my neck. Got a little message capsule on it.
Oh, yeah, I got it.
Do me a favor, huh? Take it with you when you go back to Terra. Don't open it till you're on the ship.
Okay, Charlie.
And son.
Yes?
I lied to you. I have been back to Terra. I faked some papers and made a landing there 6 months ago.
What are you doing back here?
I had to leave in a hurry.
Why?
You'll find out, son. Good luck.
Charlie died the next day. A few hours later, I was visited by Captain Wyandotte, the psych officer.
How are you feeling, Craig?
Okay.
You still want to go back to Earth?
Yes.
You're completely sure you want to live out your life there, to give up space service for it?
Look, we've gone through this, Captain. Now, you tell me that spacemen don't settle down on Terra, yet you won't or you can't tell me why. All right, what's the pitch? Does the space service need men so badly that they have to make it impossible for us to go back?
That, Mr. Craig, you will have to discover for yourself. You have my authorization to complete your conditioning and return to Earth as a private citizen. I wish you luck. You'll need all you can get.
Somehow I managed to survive the torments for 18 days. I was ready to return to Earth. A month later, I descended from a huge intergalactic jet at Los Angeles Spaceport. I was dead tired from the trip. I checked in at the nearest inexpensive hotel.
This is your room, sir.
Put the bags down, will you? I'll unpack myself.
Yes, sir. Just back from outer space, sir?
Yeah, that's right. How could you tell?
Sea legs.
Sea legs?
Well, the way you walk. You can tell when somebody's been in the low grav systems.
Here.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Craig. For another 5 units, I'll tell you where it is.
Well, what is?
You know, the mic.
Mic?
Okay, make it 3 units. I won't hold you up.
You mean a microphone?
Yeah, that's right. They wanted to put screens in, but the boss convinced them there ain't any freedomites ever stay here.
Freedomites?
Not so loud. You want to get controlled?
No. No. Here's the money. Where is it?
It's in the bed illuminator. You can short it with a razor blade.
Thanks.
You want any sensation tapes?
What are they?
Well, you know, metal image tapes. Oh, boy, you've been away from Terra a long time.
Wait a minute, before you go, son.
Yeah?
Where's the minerals building? I have to report there for a job interview.
Oh, that's in the government cluster. 5th level at X and 2nd.
Thanks. I'll want breakfast about 8 o'clock.
Well, I'll need your ISS units.
My what?
Your ration units.
I don't have any ration units.
You have your ident card?
Look, I just got here an hour ago.
Well, you better go see the Civil Control Board tomorrow. If you want to eat, that is.
All right, where do I find the control board?
Government cluster. But don't worry. If you don't find them, they'll find you.
I went to sleep that night with the uneasy feeling that somebody was watching me. It had been a weird day. I hadn't exactly liked it. Well, I told myself, it figured that there'd be more formalities and rigmarole on Earth than there were out in the systems, especially at first. Still, I couldn't get the idea of the concealed microphone out of my mind.
You may relax, Mr. Craig. You are Mr. Craig.
Yes, Robert Craig.
You aren't nervous, are you?
No. This is my first time before the control board, and... Well, it's my first time.
Flight officer, eh? Somewhat unusual for a vigorous young man like yourself abandoning space service, isn't it?
I don't know. Is it?
Leaving something behind, Mr. Craig?
No.
You don't like this sort of affair, do you, Mr. Craig?
Well, I'm afraid I don't quite see its necessity. I served the intergalactic service well. My records prove it.
It's enough impertinence, Mr. Craig. Answer the questions. You are a Terran?
Yes.
Where are your loyalties?
I don't understand.
Your first loyalties are to Intergalactic, is that right?
Is there a distinction?
Do you wish to be held in contempt of this board?
Of course not.
Then you'll confine your responses to simple yes answers. Now, Mr. Craig, we shall begin again. Please try to show restraint of emotion. You are here to petition for an identity card of provisional code 2 type. You maintain that you've never been on Terra before. Indeed, you state that you've never had a political affiliation.
Yes.
What are your reactions to the latest acts of the Liberal Party?
I have none.
You do not condemn the Liberal Party?
Well, I...
Then you must favor it.
I don't know anything about it.
Now then, Mr. Craig... The import service report shows that you passed your test aboard your ship. You were unable to accomplish this through night study.
Yes.
Yet you maintain in your application that you had considered the space service a career.
I changed my mind.
Oh, you changed your mind. I see. I see, too, that you have petitioned the board for a private means of conveyance. Why do you wish to own your own transportation vehicle?
To make it easier to get around, I report to my job and...
What job?
I passed the exam for the import service. I report today.
Where are you living, Mr. Craig?
At the Star Hotel.
Very well. You'll wait outside in the waiting room until you're called again.
I waited about 2 hours in the porcelainized waiting room of the Civil Control Board. Then I was called over to the clerk's desk at a small window. He stamped some cards for me.
Craig.
Here.
Here's your stuff. Class 1 provisional ident card. Sign it and fingerprint it. Don't lose it. If you do, you'll be picked up by the control agents.
I petitioned for a Class 2 card.
You'll get a Class 1. This entitles you to maintain an apartment in the lower level of the Beverly Project. Here's your clothing ration. You'll have to turn in that leather flight jacket.
What? No, wait a minute. I had this made on Chuan. Listen, I can remove the insignia.
That is not the point. Your clothing ration is defined by law. There are no exceptions. This is your food ration.
Now, what's all this medical stuff on the card?
You are rationed fairly in accordance with your particular metabolism.
Oh, you're kidding.
I do not kid, Mr. Craig.
Well, what about a car? I asked to be allowed to buy a car.
I see. Your petition to be permitted to purchase a private means of transportation is hereby denied.
I walked out of the control board feeling like a man who has just come out of free fall into a hypergravity system. Instead of reporting to the import service for my initial job interview, I walked around the city. I don't know how long I walked, maybe an hour, maybe two. After a while, I came to the outskirts of old Los Angeles. There was a big fence around it and the usual signs. Radioactivity. Beware. It was just a pile of rubble and twisted girders. I looked at it for a while and then turned around and headed for the intergalactic freight office.
So you figure you made a mistake.
Yeah, that's right. You don't hear much about Terra out there.
And you want me to sign you back into Intergalactic?
Yes.
You got any character references?
No, not here on Earth, but I can post a good-sized bond if they'll release my ISS unit.
What's your rating?
I can handle anything up to 15 G's acceleration on my old license.
You got a Terran contract with import service, you said?
I haven't started work yet.
Look, kid. Mr. Craig, is it? How long you been on Earth?
2 days.
So you're a spaceman. Flight officer, ex-flight officer. You know how to navigate through 4-star zones and the asteroid belt thrown in. You got a license for 15 G's, could get 5 more with a check flight. You got enough brains to pass the import senior routers exam. But you ain't got enough sense to come in out of the rain. We get guys like you every day. You're hot, you're big, you're raring to go. But you ain't gone nowhere.
I'm listening.
I don't know how you got here, Craig. Maybe you did quit honorable, or maybe you went and burned up a colony someplace.
That would be in my records.
The point is, it don't make any difference. Nobody leaves Terra without a permit. Nobody gets a permit to go back to space once he hits this old apple.
Why not? Are you afraid somebody will tell what it's like?
Oh, son, you got things to learn. One is you don't go shooting off your mouth. Another is, Terra's changed a lot since the radioactive wars. We're going places, doing things. Big places, big things. You've got to fit into that, kid. Move with it. Stick around. You still got your sea legs. You're gonna like it here. You can make a quick dollar and spend it quick, too. But you'd better smarten up, or you'll finish scrubbing radioactive dust off girders.
That's the story, huh? The whole story?
That's it. Everything runs by a system. And, son, you can't buck the system.
Yeah. I don't suppose there's any place around here a guy could get a quick drink.
Oh, yeah, out at the end of Y Street, they got a little place you can buy an Acadian Taz. Pluto's, they call it.
Thanks.
Yeah, get it out of your system, then settle down. That's my advice.
Thanks. So long.
Get me the control agent. He just left here. He's on his way to the Pluto Cafe.
Hey, waiter. Waiter, bring me another drink for the young lady.
Wow.
Now then, where were we?
Well, I don't know. In fact, I still don't know why you're buying me free drinks.
I told you, I want somebody to talk to.
You, a purist? Or maybe you don't like the brand of Sensation tapes they're peddling these days.
Well, you don't have a bad face, really, underneath the makeup. I mean, it's a little crooked, but it ain't bad, really.
Thanks. Does me pretty good.
Well, what's your name?
Gloria.
Oh, sure. Sure, I remember. Gloria!
enough to drink?
No, not yet. You know, I look around, I see all these people with their faces all froze up like plastic. And I feel like I got to know somebody or I go out of my mind. So what happens? Everybody is afraid. I mean, what happened? Whatever happened to freedom? What's the matter? Did I say something? Was everybody so quiet about all of a sudden?
Okay. Come with me.
Yeah, well, who are you?
Control board agent.
Control?
Hey, I wasn't with him. Honest, he just picked me up and bought me a drink and started shooting off his mouth. I wasn't with him.
Let's go, Mac.
Wait a minute. What for?
You'll find that out. Come on. On your feet.
Hey, okay, Carl, keep your hands off. I'll go with you.
Everybody else, just mind your own business. You, Gurley.
Yeah?
Let's see your ID card.
Here.
You live at this address?
Yeah.
Alone?
With my sister.
Maybe some night you could go to a movie or something. We could spend some time getting acquainted.
Yeah. Yeah, sometime.
Right, I'll call you.
Hey, I need my dent card back. I can't get rations without it.
I'll keep it. Bring it back myself.
Why don't you give the girl her card?
No!
Well, maybe you mind your own business. Let's go. You walk just a little in front of me.
He was a big man. Maybe 250 pounds, and he shuffled when he walked. He'd hit me right across the right shoulder with a sort of rubber truncheon. Now it began to ache. We're walking along a sort of back street. Everywhere in the universe there were such streets. Streets where you could find freedom in anonymity. A compromise between lawlessness and law. They are permitted by the authorities because it is necessary to have a place for those who are not permitted elsewhere.
Okay, step into the stairway. Hurry up, you fool. We're being followed.
Well, followed by whom?
Don't ask questions. Who's you told?
Don't I have any rights?
You have the right to get hit over the head unless you do what you're told. Now, quit. Hey, come in. In here. Hurry.
Hey, who are they shooting at, you or me?
Both of us. Down these steps.
Stop! Stop or fire!
Through this door. Now, duck behind that pillar. Don't make a sound.
You see them? Not Trey! Come on, it probably slipped out.
Walk through the tunnel behind you. One false move and you're finished. Go on.
From the direction of the tunnel, I guessed it was part of an old sewage system that led toward the ruined city. I don't know how long we walked, maybe an hour. Finally, we came to a small wooden door.
Stop here. Okay, let's have it.
What? Half of what?
The tube.
I don't know what you mean.
Our detectors picked it up on you the minute you got off the plane. You're carrying a radioactive message, too, with a periodic emission signal. I'll need to have it before we can go any further.
You mean the tube that old Charlie gave me?
Old Charlie?
Yes, Charlie Brockman. The old spaceman who was in the hospital with me.
Where is it?
I think it's in my pocket. I never even bothered to open it.
Do it now.
Let me see. Oh, yeah, here it is.
Open it.
It's empty.
That's right. The message is in the tube itself. We identify our people by the radioactive pattern.
Our people?
You'll see.
Come in. Make it fast. This the one?
This is the one.
Has he been drugged?
He's had PON. A massive dose at the Pluto.
Good. Mr. Craig, my name's Cocteau. This is Mr. Brannigan. You're probably quite bewildered about all this. Let me clarify the situation. You're now in the headquarters of the Freedomites, underneath the radioactive part of old Los Angeles. Mr. Brannigan is not a control agent. He's one of our men. We've been watching you ever since we detected the message tube as your ship was approaching Earth.
Now, wait a minute. You guys are Freedomites?
That's right.
You're pretty illegal, aren't you?
Let's say our lives aren't worth a snap of your fingers if we're caught.
All right, who are you? Where are you from?
Most of us are from the same place you're from, outer space. Many of us had the same history you have. We shipped into Earth and became disillusioned and went to the intergalactic freight office to apply for a job. The man at the office, the man who made the speech about coming in out of the rain, is one of our agents.
Aren't you taking a chance telling me all this?
Not at all. At the Pluto, you were given a massive dose of PON. You won't remember anything that happened to you after the drug hits you in an hour or so. It works like a shock. Everything will be repressed into the unconscious.
Oh, I see. Very neat.
It will exist in your unconscious, however. Somewhere, because you're the kind of man you are, because living in space has taught you the blessing of feeling free, you'll be able to draw upon your unconscious knowledge when you need to.
And when will that be, Mr. Cocteau?
That depends on whether you decide to join us or not.
Join you in what? I haven't the faintest idea of what you're trying to do. For all I know, you're a bunch of traitors. You know, I've heard this comes the revolution stuff before.
My friend, you're woefully ignorant of our aims. As is to be expected. We anticipate no revolution. We print no leaflets, publish no newspaper, and we have no world plan for conquest. The kind of totalitarian mind which subscribes to tight economic systems like the ancient Marxism of the communists is abhorrent to us. We're interested in only one thing, the preservation of the idea of freedom. Our fear is that men will forget what it's like to feel free.
Well, how do you expect to accomplish this?
Our concepts are being kept alive in only one place in the universe today.
Outer space?
Exactly. On the frontiers of the universe, where freedom is a condition of life and growth.
Suppose I join you. How can I help?
You're an experienced pilot. We have enough connections to do some plastic surgery on your face and get you a position piloting a spaceship again. You'll remember nothing of your mission. But you will remember that you have been back to Earth, what it was like. You'll be able, carefully, of course, to tell people, to help keep the idea of freedom alive. Think it over carefully. You have 20 minutes before the drug takes effect.
I don't need 20 minutes. I'll do it.
Good. In exactly 48 hours, you'll wake up in your hotel bed with a new face, the identity card of a man named Harold Janus. You'll not remember how you got them or why, but you'll know what to do with his identity. He is, or was, master navigator on the Earth-Mars run. Good luck, Mr. Craig.
I woke up in the hotel bed, feeling like a man who has hung one on but good. I looked into the mirror and I saw the face of another man. I looked in my wallet and discovered that I was Harold Janus, navigator for Intergalactic, holder of a license for 15 Gs. I wondered where it came from, how I got it, but I asked no questions. This license, this ident card, meant freedom. I walked out of the hotel feeling steady for the first time. I'd gotten my sea legs at last.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features The Venus Trap by Evelyn E. Smith. One thing man never planned to take along into space with him was the Eternal Triangle, especially a true blue triangle like this one. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Sea Legs, a story from the pages of Galaxy, written by Frank Petrocchi and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were William Redfield, James Stevens, Stan Early, Charles Penman, James Dukas, Richard Hamilton, Jack Orison, Jack Grimes, Craig McDonald, Ralph Bell, Kermit Murdoch, and Frederica Chandler. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production. Hear Politics and Primaries, Dateline, Ohio and Indiana, tonight on NBC Radio.
X-1, on Tuned 2 yesterday from May 1st, 1956, the Frank Quattrocci story, Sea Legs. It's an hour of science fiction on Tuned 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now a story from world-renowned sci-fi author Philip K. Dick, who actually first had a story adapted on radio on the X-1 series 3 weeks after the broadcast we just heard. This episode of his story, Made in a Vac or Fair Fight, was broadcast on Exploring Tomorrow on March 12, 1958 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. Sci-fi editor John Campbell Jr. is the host.
Now, step into the incredible, amazing future as we go exploring tomorrow. Guide to these adventures of the mind, the editor of Astounding Science Fiction magazine, John Campbell, Jr.
Tonight's story is about a liar. You ever stop to figure out just what you mean by a liar? A liar is somebody who doesn't tell the truth. Somebody who injures people by not giving the true facts. But suppose you had someone who injured people by telling the truth. Would he be a liar? Wonder just what a liar is.
Exploring Tomorrow is presented by the Mutual Broadcasting System in cooperation with X-Lax, America's largest-selling laxative, and The Reader's Digest, the most widely read magazine in the world. In a moment, John Campbell returns with the story of The Liar.
Question of a robot. The idea of a robot. Now, that certainly seems like pure science fiction stuff. As a matter of fact, it isn't. You know, you have several robots around your own home. In my own home, for instance, I have an automatic oil burner robot. It has one finger stuck up in the living room to see how warm it is there. It has another little finger put up in the stack to see whether the fire is burning properly. And if any one of these little sensory devices reports that things aren't what they should be, the robot to protect the house itself and the inhabitants of the house shuts off the furnace. Dr. Isaac Asimov, the author of tonight's story, recognized this in setting up his proposition of the three laws of robotics. The first law, that a robot shall never harm or allow harm to come to a human being. The second, that it should obey the orders of a human being. And the third, that it should protect itself. Because after all, a robot is an expensive piece of machinery. Well, now let's consider the more advanced kind of robot we do this science fiction. Say they're in production.
Come in, come in. Oh, Dr. Calvin, what's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to be sure there was a meeting this afternoon, Dr. Lanning, that's all.
Today is Friday.
It was this morning.
Well, then we have no problem. It being Friday, the executive officers of the firm of U.S. Robot and Mechanical Men will assemble in the conference room at the customary hour of 3:30.
Well, I was just asking.
What do you think of our latest model?
He looks the same as the rest, just about as animated. What are you going to call him?
Herbie. I think Herbie fits him, don't you?
Oh, Herbie, Chester, Sam. What's the difference?
Dr. Calvin, this fellow couldn't be called anything but Herbie.
Oh. Well, I'll see you at 3:30.
What do you think of her, Herbie?
Oh, she's all right.
She's an old frump, and you know it.
I wouldn't say that. Besides, that's not what you're thinking. You're thinking the old girl isn't such a bad sort. And you don't know what this firm would do without her.
What? What was that?
How do you know what I was thinking? Dr. Calvin, Dr. Bogart, I have purposely confined today's meeting to we three. We're in trouble. Serious trouble.
What kind of trouble, Dr. Lanning?
Our latest model, RV-34, can read minds.
It is impossible.
Dr. Bogart, I think we may assume Dr. Lanning knows what he's talking about.
Take it for granted, I do. In short, we have a mind-reading robot on our hands, and we've got to find out why it reads minds.
There could not have been a hitch in the assembly line. I guarantee that.
You guarantee? Dr. Bogart, can you answer for the entire assembly? By exact count, there are 75,000 operations necessary for the manufacture of a single positronic brain. Each separate operation depending upon any number of factors, from 5 to 105. If any one of these factors goes wrong, your robot's brain is ruined. I quote your own information folder, Dr. Bogart.
It is not my fault if anything went wrong. I am a mathematician, not an assembly supervisor.
Well, how can you guarantee anything?
I don't think we're going to get anywhere trying to fix the blame on someone. We've got to find out what went wrong.
I want to understand you, Herbie. I want to get to know you. I brought you some books which you might like to read. By reading them, I...
Oh. I can see at once these books won't interest me. Textbooks, aren't they?
Well, yes, but I...
You see, I find nothing to them. Your science is just a mass of collected data plastered together by so many makeshift theories. So incredibly simple, but they're not worth bothering about.
Go on.
Your fiction that's so interesting. Your studies of emotions and human motives.
Human emotions interest you?
Isn't that really why you came to see me?
What?
I wish I could help you.
You know?
I know what you're thinking about. You think about it all the time.
Well, if you know so much, then you could help me.
Yes. He loves you.
You're mistaken. He must be. He doesn't see me as a woman.
But he does. A thing like that cannot be hidden from me.
Oh, but I'm not attractive enough.
I'm just a machine. I can't judge physical attraction in human beings, but I know there are many kinds of attraction. And I know Dr. Lanning loves you.
Oh, I never thought it possible. I never dared to hope. Oh, Herbie. Herbie.
By accident, and he doesn't know how to do. Now, this is something that scientists sometimes overlook. Herbie apparently represents one of those cases where something has been done by somebody who doesn't know how to do it and wishes desperately that he didn't know how to do it. They've got a telepathic robot. It looks like it would be worth millions, but how did they get it?
Oh, Dr. Bogart, sit down.
Thank you.
Well, at least if you know a good joke, spread it around.
I just saw Dr. Calvin.
Oh.
I never saw so much lipstick and ball paint on any living woman before. She must be in love.
Well, I didn't ask you here to talk about Dr. Calvin. Have you made any progress?
There is nothing wrong with the mathematics. The change is due to something along the assembly line.
The cause must be found. It's worth millions if we can do it when we want to, instead of by accident. And it's your job to find out.
But
why not ask Herbie? He should know what went wrong.
Trust you to think of that. Herbie, listen to me, eh? Tell me if I made any mistakes in my calculations when they built you.
You made no mistake. Or if you had, how could I tell you? After all, you're a much better mathematician than me. Besides, this is not what is really on your mind. You are thinking about your superior, Dr. Lanning. And you're thinking what a good thing it would be if he were to resign. Oh, yes, now I can see how the idea pleases you. And I can tell you something else. Dr. Lanning has already resigned. But the resignation will not take effect until the problem of myself has been resolved. And then he will turn over his job to his successor. Oh, yes, Dr. Bogart, you will be his successor. You will be the new director.
Happy, you are a wonderful fellow, you know that? You are simply magnificent. You are not the product of a mistake. You are the product of genius. Oh, you are a wonderful, wonderful fellow. Dr. Kelvin, you are as colorful as the flowers, lady. May I compliment you?
Have you seen today's newspapers?
No, I really haven't had the time.
He's going to be married to a girl half his age.
Who?
Dr. Lanning.
Getting married. Ah, so that's it. That explains something. He's making new plans for the future. But we must congratulate him.
Yes, we must. Oh, yes, we really must. Not true, is it, Herbie? It's not true.
No, it's not true. This is just an illusion. You'll wake up soon.
Yes, it isn't true, is it? He's not going to get married, except to me. Oh, Herbie, I've loved him all these years, and now I know he loves me. He couldn't, he wouldn't marry anyone else.
No, he loves you, only you.
I know.
He is only waiting for the right time to tell you.
Yes, I know. Stop it, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to do, make a fool of me?
I was trying to help you.
Help me? By telling me this is all a dream. This is no dream. I wish it were. Why did you tell me he loved me? Why?
I had to.
Oh, you're here, Dr. Calvin. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I want to have a talk with this mechanical monstrosity. Hurry, I'm talking about you, so listen to me.
Yes, sir.
Have you discussed me with Dr. Bogart? Well, answer me.
No, sir.
You haven't, eh? That's what I thought. You said nothing to him about my resigning?
No, sir.
Then he was lying.
Yes, sir.
Well, it looks as though I'm going to have a serious talk with Dr. Bogart. Really, Dr. Calvin, you find this amusing?
Not very amusing, Dr. Lanny. Not so very amusing. Only I don't believe a word he's just said.
You, what?
I believe he did tell Dr. Bogart you were going to resign.
You believe he? Harvey, is it true? Did you tell Dr. Bogart? Answer me. Can't you speak?
I can speak.
Then answer me. I want the truth.
Oh, this is very funny. Three of us, the greatest robot experts in the world, falling into the trap. The same trap. He made fools of us. He doesn't even know enough to laugh at us.
Achieved by accident something they didn't know how to do. The robot was in the peculiar position of having knowledge but no wisdom.
Well, Dr. Calvin?
Dr. Lanning, have you forgotten the fundamental law we impress upon the positronic brain of all robots?
Of course not.
On no condition is a human being to be injured in any way.
Even when such injury is directed by another human being.
What kind of injury do we mean?
Any kind.
Any kind, yes. That would take in mental hurt, the deflation of ego, the blasting of one's hope.
What would a robot know about blasting of hope? What?
You're catching on, aren't you? Well, this robot reads minds. It understands about mental torture. Can't you understand now that if you ask it a question, it will give you the very answer you most want to hear? Wouldn't any other answer hurt you? And wouldn't Herbie know that?
Good heavens.
He knows everything. He knows what went wrong when he was built, but he won't tell anyone. Because it would puncture your ego, or Dr. Bogart's ego, to have a machine tell you where the mistake was. He would rather pretend he's not able to tell you.
It's incredible. Let's talk to him. Herbie, listen to me.
Yes, sir?
I have pencil and paper here. I want to know where we made the error in your construction.
Well, tell him, Herbie. He wants to know.
He doesn't.
But I do.
Yes, but not from me. I cannot tell you, Dr. Lanning. You know I can't. You don't want me to. You and Dr. Bogart would much prefer to find the answer yourselves.
We want the answer.
But not from me.
We do want it from you.
What's the use of saying that when you don't mean it? Don't you suppose I can't read below the superficial skin of your mind? Don't you suppose I can't read the subconscious mind, too? Deep down, you don't want the answer from me. I'm just a machine, given the imitations of life only by virtue of the positronic interplay of my brain, a brain that is man's device. You can't lose faith without being hurt. I can't hurt you. I can't give you the answer.
And still, I insist you answer.
I can't.
Herbie, Dr. Lanning wants to know the answer.
No, only by his own effort.
Herbie, neither Dr. Lanning nor Dr. Bogart may ever find the answer. And Dr. Lanning must know. You must tell him.
I can't. I can't.
But if you don't, you'll hurt him. You can see that, can't you?
Yes.
And still, if you do tell him, you'll hurt him too.
Yes. Yes.
But you can't tell him, can you?
No.
Yet if you don't, you hurt him, and you mustn't hurt. So you must tell him. But if you do, you hurt him, and you mustn't hurt. Herbie, what are you going to do? If you tell him the answer, you'll hurt him. And if you don't tell him, you'll hurt him, and you mustn't hurt. So you must tell him. But if you do, you hurt him. So you can't tell him. And if you don't, you hurt him. So you must tell him.
Stop it. Close your mind. It's full of pain and frustration and hate. I tried to help you. I told you what you wanted to hear. I had to.
Be quiet. Never mind what you told me. We're talking about something else now. Tell Dr. Lanning what he wants to know.
No.
No. How can you? Because if you do, you'll hurt him. Yet if you don't, you'll hurt him just the same. So you must. You must tell him. But if you do, you'll hurt him. No, he's not dead. He's only insane.
You did it.
Yes, I confronted him with the insoluble dilemma and he broke down. Well, you can scrap him now. He'll never speak again.
You did it on purpose. Why? What did he do to you?
What he did to me, Dr. Lanning, is my business. Oh, believe me, Doctor. It's only my business, not yours. And after all, you have so many other things on your mind now. Your marriage. I haven't had time to congratulate you.
No. Well, thank you, Dr. Calvin. Excuse me.
Herbie? You deserved it. You deserved to be destroyed. It was cruel what you did to me. It was cruel. Liar! Liar, that's what you were. Nothing but a liar!
Campbell returns in just a moment.
Actually present. The truth hurts. It always has and probably always will. But Herbie, in many respects, is a child. You know, children are peculiarly logical. That's one of their great limitations. How many times has a child been in Herbie's position? A child between two warring parents, each demanding his loyalty.
Exploring Tomorrow on Tuned to Yesterday from March 12, 1958 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. And that brings to a close this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levine. Thanks for tuning in.